Hello, this is a Science Weekly special from The Guardian. I'm Alok Jha. On this week's podcast, a new year and a new beginning for The Guardian. After several decades in a grim 60s warehouse in London's fashionable Clerkenwell, we're moving. Not far, just a mile up the road to King's Cross. But we wouldn't be the paper we are if our building wasn't an environmental masterpiece. So, for this green-tinged special edition of Science Weekly, we take a tour around the building with the architects who've used some groundbreaking techniques to achieve its sustainability goals.
What the triple wall allows us to do is actually cut out a huge amount of heat. We reduce heat gains down to 100 watts per square metre, which allows the building to act under a normal displacement ventilation system. And the way it does that is it acts like a thermal chimney.
Plus, we look at how The Guardian itself is managing its waste and energy.
All of the food waste which comes from the restaurant and from the office floors will be used to make biogas, which is renewable energy, which also saves methane from going into the atmosphere, which is a very strong greenhouse gas.
Welcome to our new home. This is Science Weekly from The Guardian at King's Place, London N1, 9GU.
My name's Jeremy Dixon. I'm an architect and partner of the firm Dixon Jones. We're standing outside next to the water, the canal. And that reminds one right from the beginning that this is a building about choices. And the choices really come from the person behind it, Peter Millikan, who is an entrepreneur with a great deal of imagination. So not only have we got a wonderful site next to the water with all its environmental gains, we also have a site that's near to King's Cross and the biggest transport hub in Europe, I believe, which is itself a way of being efficient about energy and use of transport. Peter is a very interesting character. He has had from the outset the idea that an office building might also be a public building, a building which supports culture. And in a way, that's a kind of sustainability as well, because it means the building will have a purpose for much longer than a normal office. It'll be a landmark, a place for people to come over the years. And that richness includes music and art and concert halls and orchestras and all the rest of it, which no other office building in London has. And then if you look at it in terms of more literal energy resource concerns, Peter was a very responsible client. Right from the outset, he said that the air conditioning had to be the kind that had the biggest use of valuable space in order to reduce the amount of energy. In fact, he accepted losing a whole floor within the height of the building to achieve efficiency of air conditioning. And similarly, he was very clear that the south and west facing facades of the building should deal with solar energy, with again a high cost investment, which is to have what's called a triple wall, whereby you have an extra layer of glass, and that leads to the feature at the front of a curved facade. There are lots of things about the way the building has been approached which are extremely responsible, and certainly as architects, all along we have been challenged and fascinated by the way the briefing has taken place from this, as I say, very imaginative client.
So clearly the environmental planning for this building started well before the first brick was laid, but let's go inside and have a look at some of those things you talked about. So we're inside the main atrium now. Jeremy, describe what we're seeing.
Yes, you call it an atrium. It's not quite a typical atrium. It's the space between blocks of building, and the blocks are separated for planning reasons, really, because this is a site where a very big building will be a problem for the planners. So we broke the building up into bits, and the atrium is the bit, or the space that lies between the bits, part curved, part rectangular. It's unusual because it doesn't have roof light at the top. It has light from bridges along the side, so it's like conventional windows. And it's the heart of this social idea that Peter Millikan has, that this should be a public place. I'm looking across at the little self-servery place, self-servery bar, and then across in the corner to a restaurant. In front of me are escalators that take you down to the concert hall. And in one direction, we can see out into York Way with all its noisy bustle. And in the other direction, we can look back towards the water and the canal side, which is extraordinarily quiet. And indeed, sustainability in the widest sense, to have a place that's peaceful and quiet and people can enjoy and feel rehabilitated by, also seems to be part of the argument.
One of the biggest parts of a person's carbon footprint is the emissions from transport. Jeremy, why was it important that this building is close to a major transport hub?
I know that Peter, the client, spent a long time looking around London, not just to King's Cross, but all the transport hubs, looking for a site that meant that he could have a centre of employment where there was a minimum amount of transport load on the city. And one of the problems for the modern city is people piling out of stations and onto the tubes and then going for another half hour, three quarters of an hour on a secondary journey. It's fundamental to the location of this building here that it minimises secondary public transport, maximises the use of a major transport hub.
Science Weekly.
Hi, my name is Claire Buckley and I'm the environmental manager for The Guardian. It's a new position that was created just a few months ago just to show how seriously The Guardian is taking sustainability. And one of my roles is to make sure that in our lovely new sustainable building that we act also in accordance with our surroundings. Well, at the moment we're in our lovely new restaurant and one thing that we're doing in King's Place, which is very important for the catering, is that we're introducing a whole new waste stream, which is food waste, which means basically that all of the food waste which comes from the restaurant and from the office floors will be used to make biogas, which is renewable energy, which also saves methane from going into the atmosphere, which is a very strong greenhouse gas. And not only that, but we'll also be able to use the results of the food waste digestion to make a biofertilizer, which is used for agriculture. We reckon that we'll be able to deal with about a third of our total waste volumes. What else I could say about the food waste is not only can you put food waste in, but also we have a lot of biodegradable packaging which is used. All the cups at the tea points are compostable, and also the restaurant uses a lot of biodegradable packaging. So all of that packaging can also be put into the green label food waste bins, and that will also be dealt with to make this biogas and to make the fertilizer. So it's quite exciting. When the food waste has been separated, we have special bins for it. It goes down to the dungeons, to the basement of the building. Then twice a week, a company called Biogen comes and picks up the waste and brings it to its plant in Bedfordshire. It's put in these special containers where there's a process called anaerobic digestion, which is a natural biological process using organisms, and they digest all of that lovely waste, and that process results in biogas from the methane, and also then the end result is a fertilizer which can be used. And what's interesting is that the energy, the biogas which is generated, is used at the plant itself to power its own process. So it has a combined heat and power facility which uses the energy from the food waste. Well, we're in the basement now. Some not so pleasant odours emanating. This is the area where all the waste from the office floors and from the restaurant comes down here. And what happens is basically it gets separated. There's one area where you have all the recyclable waste, which for us is all the paper, plastic bottles, cans and glass. And all of that waste is recycled as long as it's been correctly separated. The paper is used to make recycled paper, the bottles, the cans and the glass are recycled. And then on the other side we have the what's called the wet waste, which is all the general waste, the stuff that can't be recycled. And what happens to that is that it doesn't go to landfill, it goes to an incinerator here in London. And at least it's we would consider it a little bit better than going to landfill, because the incineration process generates some energy which is used for heating energy, so that's considered a little bit better. We also have some small waste streams which are important too. So we have CDs which will be recycled as well. We have batteries which are considered as a hazardous waste because they contain some chemicals, so we have to make sure that they're carefully disposed of, not just thrown in the bin or thrown into a landfill. And then we will have other types of waste, like all the toners from the printers and the photocopiers, and they will be recycled. And if we have any building waste, such as lighting, fluorescent tubes, we also have to make sure that that is disposed of responsibly. And I think the last one that people wouldn't see is that from the restaurant, the used oils are also, they're considered as a chemical waste and they have to be disposed of safely as well. So we make sure that that happens too. So we'll take a bit of getting used to. We are keeping an eye on it, looking for feedback from people, also with the cleaning company getting their feedback. And from the waste management company, they will give us feedback if there are big problems in separating the waste. If you have a bag full of paper which has a soggy coffee cup in it, that will ruin that whole batch, so it won't be recycled.
Science Weekly from guardian.co.uk with Alok Jha.
We've just taken the swishy lifts up to the second floor. Now, this is where the editorial hub is going to be, where all of the newsroom sits, the sports people, the Observer, all the Guardian departments. And we're standing right at the front of the building, where if you're standing from the outside, you can see a sort of wavy front. And this is kind of the logo for King's Place. It's a very pretty glass structure. But it has more than just a sort of artistic quality. I'm standing here with Richard Thompson. He's one of the lead architects on the project. Richard, tell us what functional use this beautiful curvy glass has.
Well, there are a couple of major reasons why we looked at the glass facade in the first place. It wasn't originally a curved facade. That was something that came out of the design process. The major issues with where we're standing is the largest and the deepest part of the floor plate, and we wanted to maximise daylight penetration here. That's the essential goal. Full ceiling to floor glazing maximises the amount of daylight, maximises the connection with the adjacent areas. Also, we're right next to King's Cross Station and the railway tracks outside, and we're overlooking the site, which is going to be King's Cross Central, which is a huge development site, 50,000 acres. So there's a potential here for a lot of noise, disruption. So we wanted the combined benefits of the daylight without the noise. So we looked at a triple wall solution, which is offers an insulating blanket, a third layer of glass sitting outside the conventional double glazed facade. So effectively three layers, and the outer layer being a defensive layer almost, which acts as environmentally and acoustically. And also in this instance acts as an aesthetic idea, a sculptural idea for the building.
Now the glass, one of the useful things it does is to reflect away the heat of the sun whenever that gets too much. We're facing west here.
Yeah.
And also what it will do is to, it's a very clever part of the air conditioning. Can you take us through that?
Once we decide to have full height glazing, we expose ourselves to the potential of having too much heat gain in the floor space. What the triple wall allows us to do is actually cut out a huge amount of heat. We reduce heat gains down to 100 watts per square metre, which allows the building to act under a normal displacement ventilation system. And the way it does that is it acts like a thermal chimney. So the outer layer of glass and the breeze delay that you see here and the walkway below us all absorb the heat as it's coming through the glass and help to channel it away through this chimney effect, through the stack effect, through the triple wall and up at the roof level. There are louvers and air is discharged at the roof level, keeping the heat away from the office spaces and reducing the heat gains in the building.
And on cold winter days, you can close the louvers,
yes,
and keep the warm, keep this sort of warm air in.
Exactly. In the winter, there are the louvers at the top of the triple wall close. The air is trapped effectively there, and it acts like a thermal blanket, acts like a duvet to the building.
What does that do to the energy use of the building? I mean, air conditioning is notoriously energy intensive. In this building, using the technique you just described, how much energy are we using compared to normal buildings?
There are a number of factors at play. The facade helps to reduce the heat gains, but there are still choices to be made about how we ventilate the building. Because the client had the foresight right at the start of the project to insist on a displacement ventilation system, we were able to achieve reductions in energy of roughly half a conventional office building, and thus CO2 emissions are reduced dramatically. That basic first move is the major environmental factor for the building. It helps to reduce energy consumption, creates a better working environment, and reduces our CO2 footprint as a building.
So if you step onto one of the floors here in King's Place, one thing you immediately notice is, if you listen very carefully, there's no fans. The air conditioning system here works in a completely different way. It doesn't blow air at you.
The principle of displacement ventilation takes the idea that one brings air into the office floor plates through the floor and lets the fresh air filter up through the space, rise as it gets warm and as extracted from the ceiling. In a conventional office building, you have air conditioning units which blow cold air from the ceiling. That's inefficient in terms of energy. It also doesn't create a particularly comfortable working environment. You have less fresh air per person, and it tends to be a cooler air which you feel as a draft. With displacement ventilation, you use four times as much fresh air as you would in a conventional office building. And in this building, the benefit of that is reduced energy costs and a much better working environment because you have much more fresh air as an occupant.
We're standing by the bank of lifts now, here on the second floor. And, you know, if you come along and you're using the building, there's something in the, here that you won't notice. Richard, tell us what it is.
Well, behind each of the lift shafts, there are air shafts, which are effectively big concrete tubes that go right the way from the roof of the building, right the way down to the basement. And these shafts are enormous. Over the size of the building, they take up about 50 square metres. Those shafts are used purely for bringing fresh air and mixed air down from the roof, where the cleanest air is, down into the basement, where the air is handled, and then it's recirculated through the office. So there's an incredible investment in the quality of air and bringing air through the building at low velocities to avoid noise in the office floor plates and to increase those volumes of fresh air that we talked about earlier.
50 square metres is a huge amount of space in central London for an office block. Couldn't you have fitted more desks into that space?
The short answer is yes. It's a sign of real commitment to the principle. And I have to say, from day one, the client came to us, Peter Millican, and said, this is what I want to achieve. I want to bring fresh air from the roof and serve as a displacement ventilation. And that was something that was challenged a number of times when budgets are tight or we want to make a little bit more office floor space. And it was the one thing that was sacrosanct. It was never looked into reducing it or omitting it.
There's one more thing that people might sort of be surprised by, which is that you could have fitted another floor into this building, apparently.
Yes, the floor-to-ceiling heights in King's Place are 3 metres. The typical London office is about 2.7, 2.75 metres. And it doesn't sound like very much, but over the height of the building, that's the equivalent of an extra floor. The benefits of that are, with the increased height of the floor plates, there's just a sheer generosity of scale within the spaces, but also it helps to increase the amount of daylight penetration. And it also helps in the ventilation system in that the hot air tends to get stratified up into the upper levels of that ceiling. So you don't get the sense of hot air collecting and being affecting the environment that you're working in.
Hi, it's Claire again, the environmental manager. And now I'm on the fourth floor and I'm going to talk to you about another issue aspect of how sustainable this building is and how sustainable we are going to be in it. Just wanted to say a little bit about the way that the building has been fitted out and furnished. The furniture which was chosen meets certain environmental criteria, so most of the furniture is made from a minimum amount of recycled materials, and then the way that the building was actually fitted out, so inside you see all the carpets and the partitions and the glass. That was done by a company called Overbury. And one of the key cornerstones of the contract with Overbury was environment and sustainability. This means a few key things. One is, during all the works that they did to fit out the building, they generate a lot of waste and construction waste and cardboard packaging, and they had a strict recycling system in place for that. And we're waiting for the final figures, but we estimate that they will have recycled about 80% of the total waste, which is very good. Another thing which was very important is that we asked them to source sustainable timber where possible, so timber which hasn't been illegally felled, which isn't from an endangered species. In addition to that, Overbury calculated the carbon footprint of everything, of the whole works for us in King's Place, so the travel and the transport that it involved, the waste that was generated, the materials used. We reckon it'll be about 200 to 300 tonnes of CO2. We are going to work with an organisation called Sandbag, and what Sandbag is going to do is go to a large industrial company and buy off their permits to produce CO2 and retire those permits. So basically what it means is that large industrial companies in the UK get a certain quota of CO2, what they're allowed to emit. And if they emit less than that, they have what they call carbon credits, and they can sell those credits to companies which will have gone over their quota on CO2. But in this case, what Sandbag is going to do for us is they're going to buy the carbon credits off those large industrial companies and they're going to bury them. They're basically going to retire them, which means that ultimately the level, the caps, the quotas on CO2 should come down altogether. It's a little part, it's only 200 to 300 tons. Our overall carbon footprint for the last year we estimated was just over 14,000 tons. But this is the start of a cooperation with Sandbag, and we're going to be looking with Sandbag in the future at what we can do to partially compensate for our carbon footprint. Okay, so we're in a think pod now, somewhere nice and quiet. The whole building at King's Place is supplied with renewable electricity from a company called Ecotricity. Most of that electricity is generated through wind turbines. The lighting system is motion sensitive and has been timed, so after a certain amount of inactivity in an area of the building, it will be turned off. There will be some initiatives also on the technology side of things. You may have noticed that there are like plasmas, TVs all over the place, and we obviously have a lot of technology, all our lovely new computers. A technology department will be working to monitor and to help reduce the energy consumption of technology. Again, it's early days yet. It's something which we'll be able to do a bit better when we've settled in, but there is definitely plans to do something there as well.
We're in Studio One of the new multimedia hub at King's Place. This is a historic recording. It's the first ever in the new building. And, you know, here it looks all futuristic. There's all sorts of wires and expensive studio equipment. It doesn't fit the idea of a sort of green hair shirt building. Richard, when people think of green buildings normally, we're normally thinking of cardboard walls and green roofs and things. How is this building different to all of that?
There's a tendency to go for the headline grabbers with sustainability. And there are certainly things like green roofs and making walls out of straw bales. And, you know, all of that, it can be good and it can be right in the right circumstances. This is a big building. Working, you know, there's 3,000 people working in here. It has certain demands on it. And the starting point has to be fundamental aspects of the way it's ventilated and the way it's built. Although we've got energy-saving devices, we've got a green roof, we've got a brown roof, we've got low water usage fittings, we've got low energy light fittings and zone controlling, all these ingredients which we talk about a lot, that's not the key issue. The key issue is the fundamental principle of is the principle of displacement ventilation and regeneration in the heart of London, right next to a transport node. That's the root of it, and that's what underpins the whole project.
What about the future of this building? It's not got a renewable energy supply, for example. Can you fit one? Can you fit windmills onto it or photovoltaic cells onto the roof?
We didn't want to preclude doing anything, so the infrastructure is here to be able to use renewable sources at some point. At the moment, it doesn't use renewable energy sources, but photovoltaic technology is moving on, and that might be appropriate in years to time. Wind turbines, potentially, who knows? We should be open to all of those things, and we shouldn't preclude them, and we should hope that they can come along in the future and actually make more contribution to the building.
So that's everything you need to know about our new building. Time to sign you out at reception and send you down the escalators to the hustle and bustle of King's Cross. But before we kick you out, you could stop off in the bar or catch something at one of the concert halls downstairs. This Green Tinge Science Weekly special was produced by Andy Duckworth. You can leave your thoughts on our blog at guardian.co.uk/scienceweekly. I've been Alok Jha. Thanks for listening.